Goodman, host of Democracy Now! This is CFRC, 101.9 FM, www.cfrc.ca, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
Let's go back to sleep, Rahaf. We're so tired! See the bunny sleeping till it's near the moon. Shall we wake them with a merry tune? They're so still. Are they ill? Wake up soon.
That's Ms. Rachel, dancing with Rahaf, a 3-year-old double amputee from Gaza, who lost her legs in an Israeli airstrike. Ms. Rachel's videos are watched by millions of children around the world. She's been called the Mr. Rogers of our era. And she hasn't shied away from speaking out about injustice, most notably about Gaza and the plight of Palestinian children.
It's never been wrong to say not to starve children and not to bomb children and not to kill 15,000 children. What's wrong is to be silent.
Ms. Rachel will join us in our studio. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. A delegation of Hamas officials has arrived in Egypt for a new round of talks on securing a ceasefire deal for the Gaza Strip. Their trip comes as Israeli forces press deeper into Gaza City as part of a plan to forcibly displace nearly 1 million Palestinians and push them into camps further south. Over the past 24 hours, at least 8 Palestinians, including 3 children, have reportedly starved to death due to Israel's months-long blockade on food, including infant formula. Meanwhile, Israeli attacks over the last day killed at least 123 people and injured nearly 440 others. Among the dead are Palestinians bombed by Israel as they sold water on the streets of Gaza City.
This street, which is full of displaced people from Beit Hanun and from all over the Gaza Strip, was hit by a missile. There are 3 martyrs here, women and children, selling water. As you can see, here's the blood and here's the shrapnel. We are innocent people sitting in our homes, not knowing when this war, this genocide by the Israeli occupation army, will end. Enough people, enough world, wake up. We are dying here day after day, martyrs for no reason.
Meanwhile, Israeli settlers have shot and killed another Palestinian in the occupied West Bank. 35-year-old Tamin Khalil Reda Dawabsha died of his wounds this morning after he was shot by a settler in the town of Douma, south of Nablus. According to a Palestinian rights group, he's at least the 10th Palestinian killed by Israeli settlers since the beginning of the year. Protests and vigils continue worldwide, demanding accountability and justice following Israel's targeted assassination of Al Jazeera correspondent Nasser Sharif, along with 4 of his colleagues and a freelance journalist outside Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza City Sunday. Here in New York, hundreds gathered outside the New York Times Tuesday, decrying what advocates say is the Western media's complicity with Israel's genocidal war on Gaza and the relentless killing of Palestinian journalists. In Texas, protesters mobilized outside the Dallas Morning News headquarters, demanding U.S. reporters speak out against Israel's attacks on the media. Similar actions took place in Los Angeles, outside Fox studios and other U.S. cities, including Washington, D.C., where demonstrators rallied outside the offices of NBC, Fox, ITN, and The Guardian. Protesters gathered in Mexico City, in solidarity with Gaza journalists. Mexico is the deadliest country in Latin America for media workers. Meanwhile, the Hind Rajab Foundation and the Palestinian Center for Human Rights have filed a complaint at the International Criminal Court against Anas al-Sharif's killers. The United Nations confirmed Tuesday UN officials met with the chair of the so-called Gaza Humanitarian Foundation at a U.S.-hosted event on Gaza's crisis. It was the UN's first direct contact with the foundation since Israel barred international humanitarian aid distribution in Gaza, turning over control to GHF, a shadowy U.S. and Israeli-backed organization whose aid distribution sites have been widely condemned as death traps. Over 1,800 Palestinians have been killed while attempting to collect food since GHF took over Gaza's aid operations, with at least 19 aid seekers killed yesterday alone. On Tuesday evening, Israeli peace activists in Tel Aviv condemned Israel's starvation campaign against Gaza as they protested outside a hotel where GHF officials were reportedly staying.
We oppose every action that the Gaza Humanitarian Fund are doing. They must close now. Aid must flow to the 400 points that are existing with UNRWA and all the other agencies that are ready to do their work so the food comes to everybody.
Top diplomats from 26 nations, including many U.S. allies, are calling for urgent action to end Israel's siege of Gaza. The foreign ministers of Australia, Belgium, Canada, France, Italy, Japan, Norway, Spain, Sweden, Switzerland, the U.K., and others write in a joint statement that Israel must take immediate, permanent, and concrete steps to restore large-scale access for the U.N. and international humanitarian aid groups. They're also calling for the opening of border crossings into Gaza and an end to lethal force directed against civilians seeking food at U.S. and Israeli-run aid distribution sites. Germany and Hungary did not sign the statement, nor did the Trump administration. Meanwhile, New Zealand's leader has condemned Israel's actions in Gaza as utterly appalling and unacceptable. Prime Minister Christopher Luxon made the comments earlier today after lawmakers debated New Zealand's plan to recognize Palestinian statehood.
I think Netanyahu has gone way too far. I think he has lost the plot. And I think that, you know, what we're seeing overnight with the attack on Gaza City is utterly, utterly unacceptable.
In Sudan, at least 40 civilians have been killed in an attack by rapid support forces on a camp sheltering displaced people in Darfur. RSF fighters Monday reportedly stormed the Abu Shouk camp, which has been devastated by famine, opening fire on homes, executing civilians. Others were killed by stray bullets. This comes as cholera is ripping through displacement camps across Darfur, with hundreds of cases reported and at least 80 deaths. UNICEF says more than 640,000 children under the age of five are at risk of contracting the deadly infection. President Trump's holding virtual talks with European officials and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky today, ahead of a bilateral meeting Friday in Alaska with Russian President Vladimir Putin. Ahead of today's talks, all EU leaders, with the exception of Hungary's Viktor Orban, signed a joint statement warning Ukrainian borders should not be redrawn by force. Joining the call was Poland's Prime Minister Donald Tusk.
Ukraine cannot lose this war, and no one has the right to put pressure on Ukraine when it comes to territorial concessions or other decisions that would smell of capitulation.
President Zelensky once again rejected any ceasefire deal that will require Ukraine trade territory for an end to the war, a concession Trump is pressing for. On Tuesday, Zelensky downplayed reports that Russian forces had advanced 6 miles deeper into Ukraine's Donetsk region. But Ukraine's military is warning of a Russian troop buildup for a new offensive set to begin in September. The first U.S. National Guard troops have begun deploying to Washington, D.C., a day after President Trump announced a federal takeover of the D.C. police force. Federal officials say some 800 National Guard troops will be deployed alongside 500 federal law enforcement agents. On Tuesday, the Washington Post revealed the Trump administration is planning a so-called domestic civil disturbance quick reaction force composed of hundreds of National Guard troops set to rapidly deploy to other U.S. cities targeted by Trump. The force would be comprised of two groups of 300 soldiers permanently assigned to the force stationed at military bases in Alabama and Arizona. The Trump administration Tuesday released its annual human rights reports for every country in the world. Gone from the documents are entire sections on human rights abuses, including gender-based violence, attacks on LGBTQ plus and women's rights, and discrimination along racial or ethnic lines. Several of the updated reports omit evidence of abuses in countries whose leaders are allied with President Trump. The U.S. report on Israel was slashed by over 80% and removes almost all criticism of the Israeli government, with no mention of the humanitarian catastrophe caused by Israel's blockade of Gaza. A report on Hungary no longer documents extensive government corruption nor a crackdown on LGBTQ plus people, instead concluding, quote, there were no credible reports of significant human rights abuses, unquote. That's the same conclusion in the executive summary of the 2024 report on El Salvador, which has been slashed by three quarters and no longer cites abuses that many asylum seekers previously used as their evidence for their cases. By contrast, the 2023 human rights report on El Salvador, written by Biden's State Department, cites arbitrary killings and forced disappearances, torture, life-threatening prison conditions, attacks on the independence of the judiciary, widespread gender-based violence, and more. On Tuesday, State Department spokesperson Tammy Bruce defended the changes.
We weren't going to release something compiled and written by the previous administration. It needed to change based on the point of view and the vision of the Trump administration.
Meanwhile, the updated report on South Africa alleges the mistreatment of white Afrikaner farmers, while Brazil's human rights report criticizes the prosecution of Trump ally and former President Jair Bolsonaro for attempting a coup. A panel of federal appeals court judges ruled Tuesday teams with the so-called Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE, may access the personal data of millions of U.S. residents held by the Office of Personnel Management and the Departments of Education and the Treasury. The 2-1 ruling by Republican-appointed judges on the U.S. Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals comes over the objections of labor unions, which sued to block DOGE's access to the databases, citing federal privacy laws. DOGE will now have additional information on addresses, employer details, and other statistics on tens of millions of people, as well as student debt for more than 40 million borrowers. The White House is planning a far-reaching review of Smithsonian Museum exhibitions in order to ensure they align with President Trump's interpretation of U.S. history. That's according to the Wall Street Journal, which obtained a letter from a White House official instructing that Smithsonian exhibits should be, quote, accurate, patriotic, and enlightening, ensuring they remain places of learning, wonder, and national pride for generations to come, unquote. This comes after the Smithsonian removed references to Trump's two impeachments during his first term in office. Meanwhile, CNN's reporting the White House moved its official portrait of former President Barack Obama from a prominent position that could be viewed by White House visitors. Portraits of George W. Bush and his father, George H.W. Bush, were also moved out of public view. A federal judge in New York Tuesday issued a temporary order mandating the Trump administration immediately improve deplorable conditions faced by immigrants in ICE's shadowy detention facility on the 10th floor of 26 Federal Plaza in Manhattan. Immigrants have described being held in cells for days or weeks at a time after ICE agents took them into custody at routine immigration appointments or court hearings, often in the same building. They've been confined to overcrowded cells cells without access to showers, medication, or a change of clothes, forced to sleep on the concrete floor, left hungry, and without contact to the outside. The order also directs Trump officials to ensure people detained can make free, unmonitored, and confidential calls to their lawyers within 24 hours of being taken into custody. And in Los Angeles, a coalition of labor and immigrant rights organizations held a series of boycotts and protests Tuesday against corporations like Walmart, Home Depot, and Target, which activists say are complicit in Trump's mass deportation efforts. Martin Manteca is an organizer with the California Gig Workers Union.
Trump and his administration continue to break the law. They're the ones breaking the law, ignoring the judge's decision, and continue to kidnap people. So we're going to resist because we are on the right side of history, and we want everyone not to be afraid, not to go into hiding, but to come out on the streets, live your lives, go to work, and fight back.
The 24-hour boycott came after intensifying immigration raids at Home Depots and other locations that are known gathering places for day laborers. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. Coming up, Ms. Rachel joins us in our studio. And if you don't know who she is, go find a kid wherever they are all over the world. They'll tell you who she is. Stay with us.
Let's go back to sleep, Rahaf. We're so tired. See the bunny sleeping till it's near the moon. Shall we wake them with a merry tune? They're so still. Are they ill? Wake up soon. Let's pretend to sleep.
Rachel dancing with Rahaf, a three-year-old double amputee from Gaza who lost her legs in an Israeli airstrike. The song was Hot Little Bunnies. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now!'s Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
Well, if you've spent any time around young children in recent years, our first guest may need no introduction. The Washington Post has called her the Mr. Rogers of our era. Her YouTube channel has about, 16 million subscribers and more than 10 billion views. In January, Netflix began licensing episodes. Her show is now the seventh most watched on Netflix in the first half of 2025. We're talking about Ms. Rachel, the children's entertainer, educator, and mother, who's become a worldwide sensation over the past 6 years since she began posting videos for toddlers on YouTube. Much like Mr. Rogers before her, Ms. Rachel has not shied away from speaking out about injustice, most notably about Gaza and the plight of Palestinian children. She recently wrote on Instagram, "I want my taxes to help children, not kill them. I want my taxes to feed children, not starve them. I want to build a better world, not bomb it," unquote. In another Instagram post, Ms. Rachel said she would refuse to work with anyone who's not spoken out against the treatment of Palestinians in Gaza. She's also featured Palestinian children on her show. So now we're going to go back to that video we just played of Ms. Rachel singing with Rahaf, a three-year-old girl from Gaza who lost her legs in an Israeli airstrike.
Let's go back to sleep, Rahaf. We're so tired. See the bunny sleeping till it's near the moon. Shall we wake them with a merry tune? They're so still. Are they ill?
That video of Ms. Rachel and Rahaf has been liked over a million times on Instagram. Well, today, Ms. Rachel, that's Rachel Griffin Accorso, joins us in our studio. Welcome to Democracy Now! It's an honor to have you here. Can you talk about who Rahaf is, this little girl, how you met her, and why the children of Palestine are so important to you?
Thank you so much for having me, Amy. It's an honor to speak with you. Rahaf is an adorable, bright, loving three-year-old girl. She came here through the Palestine Children's Relief Fund, PCRF, and she was evacuated with her mom, Isra, and they're getting therapies and treatment at the hospital and living with a host family. And she's absolutely delightful. She's similar to three-year-olds I've worked with because she loves to pretend and she's just adorable and just taking in the world and so sweet and innocent. And then she's unlike three-year-olds I've worked with across communities because she has lost her legs. She's away from her dad and her brothers right now.
There in Gaza.
Yeah. And yeah, just seeing her, and also she's having more of her human rights respected right now. So she's getting medical care and she's getting food and she's absolutely thriving. This girl is going to change she has changed the world and she's going to go so far. She just has that chance now because she has her human rights respected. And I saw videos of her in Gaza on the hospital floor. I saw videos of her looking extremely depressed. And one of the things her mom told me is thank you for helping her with her mental health, because in Gaza, she just looked so distraught. And she's 3 years old, and three-year-olds are so delightful and happy. And she just, yeah, it was just really, really hard seeing her in Gaza, how she looked and the amputations. And she's been through so much, and she's three.
You rarely make overt political statements, but instead stress helping children regardless of where they live and who they are. What made you decide to speak out more forcefully on the Palestinian children? What's been the reaction that you've gotten from your millions of followers?
Well, as an early childhood educator, I know what children need to thrive. They need food, and food is being blocked from them. They need water, and water is being blocked. They need to be in school, and they've been out of school for 2 years because most of their schools have been bombed. They need medical care, and most of their hospitals have been bombed. So I see precious children, and I see them just like I see my children. And I see all children as precious and equal. My deep care for children doesn't stop at any border. And I saw these human rights violations, and I had to speak up because it's who I am. That's who I am as Miss Rachel. I love all kids.
And you've also spoken out on social media about Ariel and Kfir Bibas, Jewish children whom Hamas took hostage. And after the Bibas' deaths were announced, you wrote in a post in February, quote, "My heart is with the Bibas family, the Jewish community, and people all over the world who are grieving. We need to protect children always." But despite your speaking out that way, you've been labeled an anti-Semite by some organizations, pro-Israeli organizations. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, so that's really painful because obviously it's not true. And I care so much about Jewish children and all children. And it is difficult to receive criticism, but I know who I am. And that pain will never compare to the pain of not speaking out during a genocide and what would happen if I didn't try to help. And obviously that pain is nothing compared to a mom in Gaza who I put myself, I sat with a mom from Gaza. She is a teacher like me. And I sat with her while her child doesn't have legs. I sat with her while she FaceTimed her children who she can't eat anymore on FaceTime with them because they're so hungry. And I pictured my little boy there with my husband, and I pictured myself with my little girl having lost her legs and have that happen. And I will do anything for her. And I thought, what would I want her to do for me if we were switched? Because I was just born here and she was born there. We're not different. I saw her look at the pride on her son's face when she saw her beautiful sons in Gaza. And she had the same pride that I have when I look at my wonderful Thomas. And she is so broken about what's happened to Rahaf, but so supportive and sweet. And all she thinks about every day is getting back to her boys. And I think as a mom, the most excruciating thing in the world would be being separated from your children. And I think about Israeli moms who have children still held hostage. And I think about mothers all the time, everywhere, whose children don't have what they need. Because if I couldn't provide milk for my daughter, and it was miles away, and my baby, I have a 6-month-old, and she cries for milk, you know? And every time I feed her, I think, why is milk miles away and not getting to them? And my son said, Mommy, could the kids of Gaza, could they take a car to get the milk to the babies? And our kids are watching us. They're taking in what us grown-ups are doing, and we're not protecting children.
So Rahaf's mom is with her here. Why weren't her father and brothers able to come?
I believe Tariq can speak better to this, but I don't think that men are often approved to come. I'm not sure. They weren't approved.
And we are going to ask him in a moment, the Palestine Children's Relief Foundation. Tariq Hylett is the director of the Treatment Abroad Program for Palestine Children's Relief Fund, and he is joining us as well. Tariq, can you address that issue? Why isn't Rahaf's family all together here?
Yeah. First of all, thank you, Amy and Juan. Hello, Rachel. It's good seeing you.
Great to see you.
So obviously, it is a really difficult situation. And Rachel was actually 100% correct on the reasoning as to why we were not able to bring her other children and the father. Medically evacuating children needs the approval of the Israelis to be able to take them out. And actually, both Rahaf, her mother, and her siblings and father were all rejected the first time that we tried to evacuate them. And it didn't take until 3 other months of advocacy and petitioning to get the approval to at least Rahaf and her mother to then finally receive that approval from the Israeli military to be able to take them out and evacuate them with all the other children that we brought here to the United States. And it's really unfortunate because I don't think in any other war, conflict, genocide, would you ever see the side that is causing the harm on these children have to provide the approval for them to be medically evacuated? You know, I think about it in the context of Ukraine and Russia. You would never need the Russian approval to take a Ukrainian child out to receive medical treatment. However, it's unique in this particular case where we do need the Israeli military's approval to take out an injured child that was injured by the Israeli military.
And Tariq, your organization has evacuated over 250 children out of Gaza, but the estimates are that there were over 40,500 children have been injured since October 2024, and that includes 940 children who have had limbs amputated. What kind of medical care is necessary for amputees, especially for children amputees?
Yeah. So we are the largest Palestinian-led organization to medically evacuate children. And that is only 250 children. I mean, that is a drop in the bucket. And if we had the say on how we wanted to treat these children, it would not be evacuating them all the way to the United States to receive a prosthetic device. What we would do is part of our other programs, like our medical missions or our infrastructural program, where we build hospitals inside of Gaza, like the only pediatric oncology center currently in Gaza, that was bombed twice. We would build infrastructure inside of Gaza to treat the children inside of Gaza. However, due to these restrictions and due to the crumbling healthcare infrastructure, due to the constant dangers of our buildings being destroyed, we have to evacuate children out. And again, it's only 250 children, and you're talking about the largest organization. That should just show how many months of hard work it takes just to evacuate one child like Rahaf. I mean, at the end of the day, this is the largest population of child amputees in modern history. I mean, just saying that statement alone is insane, let alone trying to imagine just all the conflicts and the wars that have happened during our lifetime and before. And this is right now the largest population of childhood amputees. And we can't even bring in prosthetics to Gaza because they won't even allow that.
I want to go back to the issue of hunger. Ms. Rachel posted on Instagram, she addresses the crisis of child starvation in Gaza, mom to mom. Ms. Rachel, you say, as you respond to a video of a mother in Gaza, she is holding her emaciated daughter and you're holding your daughter, Susie. Let's go to the clip.
I wanted to talk mom to mom. I saw the video of you and your beautiful daughter, Aya.
Look at her. You can see her bones. Look at her legs.
This is what a baby about that age should look like.
There's no baby formula available anywhere in the country. What am I supposed to do? Is it just because she's from Gaza? Do our children have to go through this just because they're from here?
And yes, it's because she's from Gaza. It's because she's born in Gaza that she's being starved. She's being punished because of where she was born. I'm so sorry that my baby has formula and yours doesn't. I'm going to do everything I can to try to help.
Our children are like any other children, like the children of the world. Look at my daughter. Her life is at risk.
Your beautiful daughter, Aya, is just like any other baby in the world. I want you to know that I see you in Aya, and I am so sorry. And the whole world needs to just stand up and say, this is wrong. I see you. I love you.
So that's the Instagram post that you, Ms. Rachel, put up. Can you talk about the response to it?
I think it's shocking for people to see what a baby that age should look like. I mean, we all love the little chunky rolls on baby's thighs. And I think I have a huge audience of parents. That's what my platform is. And I think the majority of people around the world, they want babies to be fed, and they were heartbroken seeing Aya, and they wanted to send formula themselves. Mom said, is there any way I could send my own breast milk to Aya, and ask me for information? And I just, that they wanted to send their own breast milk there. It's just beautiful.
I wanted to go to another little girl who was known around the world posthumously, and that's Hindrajab. Now, Hindrajab came up today in the news because the Hindrajab Foundation, along with another group, has filed a complaint with the International Criminal Court against six senior Israeli commanders over the killing of the Al Jazeera reporter Anas al-Sharif and four of his colleagues at Al Jazeera, as well as a freelance journalist who was killed along with them in that well-marked press tent against Al-Shifa Hospital. The foundation is named for Hind Rajab, that five-year-old Palestinian little girl who was killed in 2024 along with five of her family members and two rescue workers who were attempting to reach them during an attack on Gaza City. On January 29th last year, Hindrajab climbed into a car with her aunt, her uncle, and cousins in Gaza City as they prepared to flee to the southern part of Gaza. But as they were in the car, an Israeli tank approached them and opened fire. Hind's 15-year-old cousin, Leon, called the Red Crescent for help.
Hello?
Hello, dear.
They are shooting at us.
Hello?
They are shooting at us. The tank is next to me.
Are you hiding?
Yes, in the car. We're next to the tank.
Are you inside the car? Hello?
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 So, That was 15-year-old Leon, who was killed along with the rest of her family. The only one who remained alive in the car was little Hind. Wounded, she called the Red Crescent back, pleading with the dispatcher to be rescued.
Come take me. You will come and take me?
Do you want me to come and take you?
I'm so scared. Please come. Please call someone to come and take me.
Okay, dear. I will come and take you.
After seeking approval from the Israeli military, two emergency workers with the Palestine Red Crescent, Yusuf Zeno and Ahmed Amadoun, went to try and rescue Hind. But dispatchers lost contact with the medics. Nearly 2 weeks later, Israeli forces finally withdrew from the area, and Hind's surviving family ventured back to the neighborhood. They found the little girl dead inside the car, alongside the bodies of five of her family members, the car riddled with bullet holes. The bodies of the two emergency workers were also found in an ambulance nearby and appear to have been killed by Israeli fire just yards from the car. After this, the Hind Rajab Foundation was formed. Her name became known around the world. You had a takeover protest at Columbia, and they renamed the building Hind Hall. Talk about hearing that story, Ms. Rachel. Talk about what it meant to you of this little conflicting reports of whether she was 5 or 6 years old.
When I heard the phone call of her begging for help, I mean, there's nothing to describe how I felt. And I posted about Hind, and then I actually heard from her mom. And Hind, she calls her her angel baby. Hind loved to play doctor and take care of everyone. And Hind loves school, and she has a brother. And they're a family just like anyone's family. And I'm just so devastated at that profound loss and how it happened. And I'm so glad that you're telling her story. But it was just hearing her on the phone. There's nothing like that.
And Ms. Rachel, you've been compared by many to Mr. Rogers in terms of your influence on children around the world. You grew up watching his show. Talk about what he means to you and his political advocacy and his courage.
Yeah, I grew up loving Mr. Rogers, and I used to go up to the TV and try and block the trolley from leaving because I didn't want the show to end. He just meant so much to me as a kid. And then I continued to read his books and watch his documentaries. And there's and one part in the documentary, he swims back and forth and prays for people. And yeah, he had such deep care for children, and he took media so seriously that it should really serve children, and that it's a big responsibility. So I think about that responsibility all the time. And then people say, you know, he wasn't political, and he was political, and he, as you're showing now, he shared the pool with Officer Clemens during that time.
Play that clip. This was 1969. Mr. Rogers used his massive platform, as Ms. Rachel does today. He used it to advocate for desegregation at a time when many white Americans were fiercely against integration of schools, swimming pools, and public spaces. In this episode, Mr. Rogers invited an actor portraying an African-American policeman, Officer Clemens, to share his wading pool and towel.
Oh, there's Officer Clemens. Hi, Officer Clemens. Come in.
Mr. Rogers, how are you?
Fine. Won't you sit down?
Oh, sure. Just for a moment.
It's so warm. I was just putting some water on my feet.
Oh, it sure is.
Would you like to join me?
It looks awfully enjoyable, but I don't have a towel or anything.
Oh, you share mine.
Okay.
Sure.
Oh,
come along. I'll put some more water in here.
Oh. This is going to turn into a beautiful day.
You like bare feet?
Well, yeah. As I grew older, I liked it more and more.
Good for you. You're pulling up your pants. I forgot to do that at first.
Oh, I don't want them to get wet.
Right.
Well, that was so enjoyable. I'm sorry I couldn't stay longer.
Well, I know how busy you are. But sometimes just a minute like this will really make a difference.
Who would have thought that this was so revolutionary? And for people who are listening on the radio or just audio, there is Mr. Rogers, there is Officer Clemens, black and white feet in the wading pool, and then Mr. Rogers shares that towel for Officer Clemens to dry his feet. An incredible moment in television history. Who would have thought that would be so controversial?
Yes, and I've seen that they were throwing chemicals into the pools where black people were swimming. And I've also seen that a family was interviewed after seeing that, and that was the end of the conversation of whether pools should be segregated, because they said, if Mr. Rogers wants to share his pool, you know, we can share our pools. So I think that's really beautiful. And I will share, when Rahaf came to visit, that there I tried to rent a space to be with Rahaf, a private space, and some people didn't want Rahaf and her family to come to the space, and we were denied. And so it made me think about just how horrible that is to say, because of who you are and where you come from, you're not welcome. And I have so many Palestinian friends now, and they're just amazing people, and it's just awful that there's dehumanization, which I've seen, and it's just so painful. I can't imagine.
Yeah, I wanted to ask Tariq if you could talk about the work of the Palestine Children's Relief Fund and how people who want to support the children of Gaza can get involved.
Yeah, thank you for that question. The Palestine Children's Relief Fund has been an ongoing organization, a trusted organization, a transparent organization for the last 30 plus years. It's older than I am. It serves multitude of functionalities. It's obviously, you know about our Treatment Abroad program, which is the one that I led that evacuates children like Rahaf. We've evacuated thousands of children in the last 30 years. We also have a medical missions program where we bring physicians from the United States to treat children in Palestine, in Jordan, and the Levant area. We have infrastructural program where our mission is to build the infrastructure and the medical complexes within Gaza and Palestine and the Levant area so that we don't need to bring children all the way here to receive medical treatment. And we have now been distributing aid, something that we have been doing as part of the Gaza Urgent Relief Project. We've been on the ground for the last 2 years, nonstop. Not a single day have we not been distributing aid. We've spent over $45 million since October 7th in distributing aid, like baby formula milk to children such as Aya, and many others that don't get their story highlighted. And in terms of how to help people, how to help the Palestine Children's Relief Fund, you can volunteer, you can donate on our website, and you can just speak about what's happening. And I want to touch on this very importantly, because I know Rachel's probably won't say this, but Rachel has been, I would say, one of the most significant, if not the most significant, voices for Palestinian human rights. Her advocacy has touched the hearts of people that never would have ever heard about Gaza or the Palestinian children. And that's why her voice is so vital and been so important. And I remember prior to reaching out to her, I was really sad at how everything was conveyed. And I felt like it was hopeless. And when Rachel began to speak out, I saw a tide shift like no other. I mean, to the point where I'm a medical student here. And I remember going to my medical class and some of the surgeries, and the nurses and the surgeons and some of the just medical students would say, oh, you know, I just saw this poor child talking about Rahaf, and this is just so sad about what's happening over there, all because Miss Rachel shared the post and spoke about it, because she touches a crowd of people that never once knew about these Palestinian children and everything that they're going through.
Can I please give Tariq some love back? Tariq, you're become such a dear friend, and Tariq is one of the helpers that Mr. Rogers was talking about, and I'll text Tariq a baby, and he's a full-time medical student, and he'll text back right away, and he'll find the child, and he's my hero, and he texts me pictures of him and his cats, which I enjoy, and you've become such a dear friend, and Tariq's actually going to be on our show with Rahaf, and Tariq's, I talk about how he's my friend, and he talks about how he's always wanted to be a doctor, and because he wants to help others, and Tariq's just amazing, and I love you, Tariq. Sorry.
We have to break, but we're going to come back to this conversation. Tariq Haylott is with us, director of the Treatment Abroad Program for the Palestine Children's Relief Fund. And for those children who are listening, you don't need me to say that Ms. Rachel is on with us because you recognize her. But yes, we're joined by Rachel Griffin Accorso, a.k.a. Ms. Rachel. I also want to ask, when we come back, the two of you, about children in the rubble in Gaza watching Ms. Rachel, and also what it was like to have Rahaf be in the studio for her as you were dancing and sleeping together, and how she did that. Was she actually nervous as she stood there and danced on her two prosthetics? This is Democracy Now! Back in a minute.
We shall overcome. We shall overcome. We shall overcome. One day.
Roger Waters, yep, Pink Floyd, performing We Shall Overcome, accompanied by a young Alexander Rowatin on cello in our Democracy Now! Studio years ago. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York. Juan Gonzalez is in Chicago. We're continuing our conversation with Ms. Rachel, the children's entertainer and educator who's become a worldwide sensation over the past 6 years. In March, Ms. Rachel posted a video of two children watching one of her videos. That's not unusual at all, most places in the world. But this was watching one of her videos in the rubble of Gaza. The caption read, "My friends Celine and Celia, in what used to be their home in Gaza, they deserve to live in a warm, safe home again." Ms. Rachel is still with us, along with Tariq Haylott, medical student and director of the Treatment Abroad Program for the Palestine Children's Relief Fund. Talk about that video, Ms. Rachel.
Oh, Celine and Zila are so precious. I've gotten to know many families, and I just wish that our leaders got to know these families and sat with them as well. Seeing them smile and feel a little bit of joy in the midst of unimaginable suffering, it's such an honor to be their friend. And it's just unbelievable.
And Tariq, before the break, you were talking, you are Palestinian. Talk about her effect in Gaza. Talk more about that, what it means for kids to be sitting in the rubble and watching video of Ms. Rachel.
I think it's the fact that they feel seen more than anything. I mean, I think this is, you know, you were talking about one of the revolutionary moments. I think this episode will be one of those revolutionary moments, because Rahaf's mother would tell me all the time, never in my wildest dream did I ever imagine that that Rahaf is going to be on an episode with Miss Rachel. I mean, you have to understand that they have lived in a blockade for God knows how long now. Never did they ever imagine to come to the United States, let alone to be on an episode with their hero, right? So I think that is probably one of the most important thing, is for the first time ever, these children truly feel seen on a large scale. And that is what Ms. Rachel's platform is providing for these children.
And Rachel, you posted a quote from James Baldwin on social media that said, quote, "The children are always ours, every single one of them, all over the globe. And I'm beginning to suspect that whoever is incapable of recognizing this may be incapable of morality." Do you sometimes lose hope that our leaders in the West are incapable of morality?
You know, I do have moments where I lose hope, to be honest, but it's really what brings me back to hope is another beautiful quote, and that one I hold dear all the time. I can't remember who it's by, but it says that we have to hold on to hope for the children in these situations, and we have to keep speaking out, and we have to hold on to hope, because we have everything right now and they have nothing. So it's our responsibility.
Ms. Rachel, can you talk about how other celebrities have responded? Start there. You have said that you don't want to work with people who don't speak out on Gaza. And can you talk about people changing, if you feel that people are changing and more willing?
I do think things are changing. And I think that it's really important for celebrities and leaders to know that you can handle some criticism for saving human lives, and that nothing is more precious than their lives. And the criticism, I think that there's a narrative that there's so much criticism and not support, but there's so much support. I have had so many people come up to me from all walks of life and start crying about these kids. And I think leaders think, oh, you're not connected to Palestinian people and Gaza. And it's what's true is we are connected to them, and you're not connected to us. You're not hearing us, that we want to feed children, and we want children to have education, and we know it's just the right thing to do to help children, but it also serves everyone, and it serves our children. We know that because of research, that when you take care of children and they have education, they're going to become happier, healthier adults in societies. And so I just think it's so important that we take care of the world's children. And I think it's such a huge failing of us adults that we're not.
Talk about, I mean, you're often doing social media, for example, on the children of Sudan. We just did in our headlines the effect on children, the horror there. And then also just how you got your start. Now, who is Miss Rachel?
Oh, my heart breaks every day for Sudan. And I actually, one of my first things I ever did was work teaching music with Sudanese and Somali refugee children in Maine. And they actually inspired me to become a music teacher. And I did some work with kids with disabilities, and I worked at daycares, and I worked at schools. And so for 20 years, working with so many different kids, and kids give us so much. I mean, I went in, I'm going to help kids, and they transform you. Service to others transforms you, and it brings you lasting joy. And it's really what matters. And so I just love kids, and I see them all as equal and wonderful. And I just wish everyone did. And I hope things change soon.
And talk about how you got your start.
I started at a preschool for kids with disabilities, and then I worked with with the kids at the Boys and Girls Club. And then, do you mean the start of the show or the start of
how you got your start in just doing the show from a couple people watching to over a billion?
I was inspired by my amazing little boy, who's him and my little baby Susie are my world. And I would stay up till 2 a.m. learning about speech to try and help my little guy with a severe speech delay. And I think, as we've talked about in this program today, that as a mom, when you see your child struggling, you'll do anything. Go moms. So I learned so much about development and speech and milestones. And then I was looking for a program for him and that I couldn't find. So my husband has a very extensive Broadway background in composing, and we joined together to create something that would meet some of the needs that we weren't seeing met.
And Tarek, I wanted to ask you whether you feel that after this long continued genocide by the Israelis in Gaza, that you feel that we're reaching a turning point, especially after that massive protest, hundreds of thousands of people in Australia in the pouring rain, and now one country after another, even in the West, beginning to recognize the Palestinian state and demand the end to the genocide. Do you feel that we're finally reaching a turning point in this conflict?
I do. And I say that with a lot of reflection on the past, because one of the biggest missions that we've had at PCRF and with the Treatment Abroad program was that we didn't just want to evacuate children to the United States. We wanted to globalize it, and we wanted to open up new pathways. And we wanted to do it in a humanitarian way. And so we said that our mission was to try to convince these governments to open up their borders to receive children, to receive medical care in those countries. And countries such as Britain, Australia, Canada, we were able to convince to open up their borders to take in the first few children from Gaza. And I'm so thankful, because now it's opened up these pathways for other organizations to also evacuate children. I just saw that another child was just recently evacuated to Britain. But yes, I do feel like the tide is shifting. I think Rachel has been a really, really big part of that. And I genuinely mean this, because the narrative is beginning to change. New people are beginning to hear about what's happening. More voices are starting to speak on the subject. More celebrities are starting to see that joining this cause is not going to be detrimental to your reputation, but in fact, not speaking up on what's happening is what's most likely going to be detrimental on your reputation in the future, and how our children and grandchildren see these celebrities. So yes, in short.
We have 30 seconds. Ms. Rachel, your final thoughts. You can share them with children around the world, with their parents, with humanity.
Well, quickly, I want to say that I'm so relieved that people are starting to talk about the starvation of this population. And I just want to honor the 18,000 children that have been killed, because it should have been so much. It should have been like these children mattered, and they're not just numbers. They're 18,000 precious children, and they were everyone's universe, as a Jewish text says. So they were somebody's whole world and somebody's whole universe. And I just want to say to the kids, hi, I'm so proud of you. You have great ideas and a brilliant mind and a wonderful heart, and you're so kind, and you're welcome, and I adore you.
Rachel Griffin Accurso, known as Ms. Rachel to millions of children around the world who have watched her videos and listened to her songs. The Washington Post calls her the Mr. Rogers of her era. She has 16 million subscribers, more than 10 billion views, one of the most popular people on Netflix, and Tarek Hailat of the Palestine Children's Relief Fund. Thank you so much.
CFRC 101.9 FM.